your need-to-know cultural snapshot of Wisconsin and beyond. This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee, a deep dive into all things intriguing, riveting, and entertaining. Now, here's your host, Sandy Max.
Welcome to this extra large episode of What's on Tap, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee. First of all, happy Les Paul's birthday to you, the man who earned the nickname the Wizard of Waukesha with his musical and technical innovations, starting in the 1940s with the log, an early version of a solid body electric guitar. Les Paul is a man who changed music history and helped redefine what the electric guitar could do, and lots of other innovations for recording techniques that still influence modern music. We're very proud of him here in Wisconsin, and there are a couple of free music performances celebrating Les Paul to tell you about, including the first ever Guitar Town Music Festival in Waukesha on Saturday. Guitar Town Music Festival organizers Brad Smith and Ian Ash will share how the event is connected also to the Chad Smith Foundation, doing good and getting music to the youth, and why music lovers just absolutely won't want to miss Saturday's event. Renowned local husband and wife actors, James Pickering and Tammy Workentine, they're going to take us behind the scenes of another legend. This one's a comedy legend duo. George and Gracie, A Love Story is the play that they are starring in at the Milwaukee Rep about George Burns and Gracie Allen. This is the closing weekend, and you will get to hear from Tammy and James what it's like bringing one of entertainment's most iconic couples to life on stage. Also, you're going to find out which movie helped boost Wisconsin tourism last year. And we'll also spotlight Milwaukee Arts Board award winners making an impact here in our community. But right now, it is time to get ready for one of Milwaukee's biggest and best summertime traditions. I look forward to this every year. It's a Polish Fest preview, and Polish Center of Wisconsin Executive Director Jeff Kaderski joins me live in the studio with a preview of Polish Fest, the food, the music, the culture, and so much more. Welcome, Jeff. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate this.
Oh, I'm glad that you are here. I truly look forward to Polish Fest. My father grew up in the Detroit area, so that's that whole side of my family, full on Polish. But ever since I moved to Milwaukee to start my Marquette years, and then I've stayed ever since, boy, have I met a lot of Polish folks here in Milwaukee. This is a lot of population, a lot of neighborhoods where used to be just completely Polish and have evolved over the decades. But what a strong tradition here.
It's strong, and we're friendly. it is what it is. It's a very strong relationships, and you build them. And it's enjoyable. That's the biggest thing about Polish.
Lots and lots of families. Can we move the microphone to you closer to you just a little bit so I can hear you better?
Okay.
Because you've got lots of good stories to tell. Because
well, I hope so. I don't know.
How long have you been helping make Polish Fest happen?
I've been with the organization about 12 years, and so it's been a whirlwind right now. So it's just getting all these. I started in March. First year, and Polish Fest was in June, so I had my feet wet right away.
Absolutely. So, what do you remember about that very first Polish Fest of a whirlwind of 3 days of this culture?
Didn't know
culture.
What I was doing. They handed me the keys. Said, here, go for it. So it was, but it was a lot put together already, but it's just a matter of trying to figure it out. And Janina Domczyk, who's the vice president of the organization and the chair of Polish Fest, really helped me out, walked me through the ropes on it, and a lot of the other people, the volunteers.
How many volunteers does it take to put on Polish Fest?
We have over 300 volunteers doing everything from setup, tear down, clean up, running the bars, running the culture areas. It's just a matter of every security, and they're just great. They really come aboard and do this all.
I got to think that they look forward to this every year, you know, to be there and to be around people and to talk and laugh and taste the food and see the sights.
They keep coming back, so we've got to be doing something right.
We're doing something right. Well, I'm going to keep inviting you back because you brought me some delicious Polish treats. What did you bring me from the bakery?
Those are from Kolachki. It's from Ideal Bakery out of Chicago. He's one of our food vendors.
Yeah.
And he sells the Kolachki package like that in our food booths. And you'll see that around in a lot of the delis in Milwaukee, a lot of restaurants, retail packets. And they're one of the largest bakeries in Chicago.
Wonderful, like cookie pastries. And I see there's a cheese flavor in here, probably a cherry and a raspberry.
Apricot.
Strawberry. Yeah. Oh, it smells buttery and wonderful.
He didn't have the punchki ready, but that was the other one that, you know, that's glazed. Basically, it's a really full, heavy glazed donut, but
filled, we know what the punch keys are, Jeff. No, but no worries.
Like some people call them a jelly donut. It's not a jelly donut, guys. It's you know, it is different dough and stuff.
But this Polish Fest really is a place to come to try authentic Polish foods, whether you love things from the bakery, but also you've got an incredible cooking demonstration this year of truly traditional foods. Tell us about that.
One of my buddies, Chef Joe Parajeki. He's the ACF president. He's been putting this on. This is his second or third year he's with us. He expanded it this year. We have a larger tent because he overfilled the tent last year, so we had to get more tents.
Oh,
you know, so
there's truly an appetite for
and
what
people
he's doing.
Really like to see him. And then, of course, sampling. You know, that's one thing we Polish people like to do is eat. So, but if you want to learn some of the products that he's going to be cooking, that's the time to do it. And he'll be explaining it. He'll have recipes. And he walks you through it and answers.
And this is what he's now say Jeff's name again.
Joe Parajeki.
Okay. So his name looks like it speaks.
Joe Parajeki.
Yeah, Chef Joe Parajeki. How do we say the kitchen that he's in?
Babushka's Kitchen.
Babushka's Kitchen is where this tent will be. And I love it. It says Chef Joe Parajeki is going to present some of grandma's best recipes in these cooking demonstrations Friday, Silesian potato dumplings. Are you going to say the Polish word for it?
No.
Oh, easy stuffed cabbage, which I know stuffed cabbage is. There you go. And then Saturday, Polish white sausage, ground beef cutlets, kielbasa. I know that
kielbasa,
one.
There
and,
you go.
And then a breaded pork cutlet. And then Sunday, farmer's cheese donuts.
Yeah. He's doing some different stuff than just your typical.
And Polish pickle soup.
Yes. That's one of his favorites. So it's like, again, where are you going to find this stuff? It's hard to find. It's kind of interesting. They are starting to bring, you see pierogi on some of the menu elsewhere in the Milwaukee area. Some restaurants are picking it up because it is a popular item.
And it's great to eat. It's one of my favorite places to eat pierogi. And you have pierogi food trucks that will be at Polish Fest this year.
I have three for pierogi food trucks, one from Minnesota, one from Chicagoland, and one from Colorado, actually. I think they're coming up. They're making the run. It's a pierogi factory, iPierogi, and pierogi rig. And they're just amazing. And you can eat pierogi all day. I mean, but there's so much other food on the grounds that traditional, really traditional, a lot of these restaurants.
What are some of the traditional foods that you look forward to eating?
Oh, the zapacana, which is it's like a French bread pizza without the sauce. It's mushrooms and onions. It's huge. And you put like a ketchup on it and it's really good. That's really good. And of course you got the kielbasa and then you have the smoked Polish and then the Tata's Deli or Tata's Pierogi is one of the biggest pierogi makers in Chicago. Has his little pop-up stand coming up with us. I say little, it's not that little, but he always has lines. So, and he'll have, I think he's doing the Bray short rib pierogi this year.
Ooh.
So we have a little unique flavors. So
that's what I was just saying.
And they try to compete, you know, the pierogi rig, pierogi that, but.
Pierogi pride.
It's pierogi
I'm
pride.
I'm here for it. I was just going to say, nothing better than a chef trying to impress and outdo the other one. We all benefit from that.
That's exactly what it is.
So those are just some of the flavors at Polish Fest. We are going to come back and talk about even more about the sights and, of course, the sounds. There will be polka music and so much more. I always love the folk dancing, the cultural tents. There's so much more to share with you in this Polish Fest preview with my guest, Executive Director of Polish Center of Wisconsin, Jeff Kaderski. Jeff, you going to stay with me?
You bet.
We're going to nibble on some kolachki, and we'll be back in 2 minutes here on What's on Tap.
You're listening to What's on Tap with Sandy Max on WTMJ.
Ah, the sounds of polka will be straining all through the Summerfest grounds because Polish Fest is back Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And with your exclusive Polish Fest preview here on What's on Tap, I have invited man in charge, Jeff Kaderski, who's the executive director of Polish Center of Wisconsin. And you really are managing 300 volunteers and coordinating everything right now. So we will have 3 days of fun.
I don't know if I manage them. They run their own ship, so it's always good. We got a good crew.
I mean, you have your whole family involved.
Yeah, I sucked them in.
What are the Kaderski's roles?
It's been voluntold.
Voluntold.
Well, yes. Running bars, running food vendors, running the bar, the reconciliations, which is, you know, the bank, basically.
Yeah.
And then I got my brother-in-law who runs, chases for stuff and does whatever he's voluntold, so. Well, and the VIP parties and all that. So it's a great, great fit. And, you know, it's just a fun time. And it's hopefully the weather holds out. That's what we're hoping for. So.
It looks pretty good overall. Looks like a nice Friday weather looks gorgeous. Chance for rain Saturday. Looks like it's going to be nice and warm, like at near 80. Then Sunday, chance for rain, but 72. And being right there on the lakefront, it'll be great.
We have a lot of souvenirs. We got a lot of t-shirts, sweatshirts, ready to go. So even umbrellas and all that stuff.
Well,
so.
And I would say, you know, I want to talk about the music, but you have plenty of tents to tuck into. One of my favorite things is the cultural village. And we talk about, you know, I mentioned my dad grew up in Detroit and my grandmother, I remember she was teaching me some Polish words as I grew up, but I don't remember any of them anymore. Do you remember some Polish your growing up?
Yes. Małnicz wytycie spać, which means naughty boy, go to bed. So that's been instilled into me. But, you know, the Plonki does their culture village and they actually have a sales pottery tent. They sell pottery there. And this year they're actually working on, because apparently must have some broken pottery, they're actually explaining and doing art to do stuff with broken pottery. So
I think it's wonderful.
It's just kind of unique.
Because you don't want to let any of that history go if you don't have to. And if you can make jewelry or some sort of artwork out of the broken pottery, I think that's a wonderful touch.
And then we got a redesigned, recultured fashion show coming up. We got our legends, our Polish legends, you know, the Wawel Dragon and stuff you can see and learn about. You know, so it's not just food and drink and everything else, even though it's an important part, but you can taste it and feel, but it's also the senses and the culture and seeing what the grandparents saw, what the grandparents felt, or just to taste, you know, walk. We also have a holiday tent. So the different holidays we have set up, the Vigilia, the Easter, what that all means, the Easter baskets, the eggs. So that'll be all sent up. We have costumes. So it's like it's a glimpse into your grandparents, your grandparents, your kids, and say, hey, I remember that. Or why did they do that? Yeah, now I know.
I mean, has it brought you closer to your family because you have grandparents who came directly from Poland and you've grown up here in Milwaukee?
You basically understand what they went through, or you try to, and it's like, oh, that's why they did that. You know, it's like, you know, my dad never did a lot of the Polish because, you know, at the time it was like, you're American, you come here and do it in America.
You know? You want to assimilate,
yeah. So it was like very interesting, but we still did some of the traditions, not as much as a lot of people do. Like for the Gilia, we used to eat prime rib. Well, that's usually a meatless dish, you know, so it was
a different Christmas Eve.
It was kind of neat growing up that way.
But to learn about the Polish holiday customs for All Saints Day, Christmas Eve, and Easter. I love that you have a Polish poet that will be at the Polish bookstore and the author's table And then, like I said, the folk arts, because
it's
decorating the eggs so precisely, and carvings, and spinning yarn, and the textiles.
We got the amber, the Polish amber. We got pottery. We got a lot of different unique gifts. Cute as a dumpling's there. They make these little cute little dumpling, Polish dumpling ornaments, and she's like, it's all handmade. So it's a lot of different marketplace vendors you can actually
walk around. All the Christmas ornaments.
I'd forgotten about Christmas ornaments. And hats and t-shirts. And
I always want to get the floor. I always love seeing all the young gals walking around, and gals of all ages, but with the beautiful floral wreaths that have the ribbons flowing.
Yep. And then, of course, we have the Little Miss Polish and Polish Fest contest.
That is Sunday.
That's on Sunday.
On the family stage. And tell me what it takes. What skills are demonstrated to become Little Miss Polish Fest?
You know, I got my office manager, Marie, and her husband or her father and mother run that. And they've been having all these, you know, contestants, and they do a talent show, and they do like costume contests and stuff, and then they have judges and pick the winner.
I'm so sad I'm over 17 years old that I can't get my tiara and banner and my special Polish Fest t-shirt. I just think that's – and a bouquet.
And like, some of them move on. I mean, to Little Miss, you know, Wisconsin, so Camping Hedge, and so it's kind of a nice feeling. So.
That is fun. Well, there's so much more to chat about. We're going to continue our Polish Fest preview of one of our very favorite Heritage festivals here in Milwaukee. We'll talk about the music and the dancing and some other traditions that Polish Fest has next on What's on Tap.
This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max.
Welcome back to What's on Tap, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee. Handcrafted, homegrown, world-class. Discover more at visitmilwaukee.org. And we are celebrating the world. Polish Fest is back again. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Henry Meyer Festival Grounds. And Jeff Kudurski, Executive Director of Polish Center of Wisconsin, is my guest with a Just a little bit more of a Polish Fest preview. We've talked about Polish food. We've talked about the cultural tents that are going to be there. Of course, we just heard some polka music and at least three stages of polka music, Jeff.
Well, we got one nonstop polka stage.
That's great.
That goes from 11 or noon to 11 p.m. Friday and Saturday.
And then, you know, that also means nonstop dancing in front of the stage,
oh, of
which
course.
Warms
you gotta
my
have
heart.
That, yes. Yes. And then we have the Miller Contemporary Stage, which has not only contemporary, we'll have stuff like first wave coming up. We have Almighty Vinyls. We have some contemporary.
And the Whiskey Bells.
Yeah. And then we have our culture stage where we have a lot of the Polish dancers.
Which is so wonderful. I love seeing the folk dancing and
yeah,
the costumes.
It's great.
And it's invigorating. It's nice to see the younger generation really dancing proficiently and taking this history so
seriously. The Seren and Serenka dancers.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we have the children's stage. And then we have the Midgate stage, which is, polka dress traditional again. So
I'm saying it's wonderful that the Midgate, because when you walk in, you immediately hear the sounds of polka music.
Engulfed with it.
And then the wind shifts and you smell some potato pancakes.
And again, we have American food too. Saz is on the ground with his famous wonton wrap cheese ton, and so we do have a mix of everything. Ion Pizza's there doing pizza, so it's like, and Words Burgers and Cousins and Cedar Crest. So, I mean, like I said, we warm them up for Summerfest. So,
and it's a great point of, I wouldn't want anybody to feel like you have to be Polish to go to Polish Fest. Come and get a window to the world,
right.
And just
and that's
come
one
and
of the reasons we present this. It's not just, it's presenting our culture and heritage to the people and patrons. And whether you're Polish, you just have to have some type, you come around with appreciation of your culture. And that's all the festivals.
And you talk about generations coming together and appreciating this longstanding history. You have an annual mass on Sunday mornings.
Sunday. Yep. It's free to get in. Gates open at 9:30 and mass starts at 10:50 with the procession. We have Archbishop Groth there. Jane Jonas does help put it together for us. And we get about 1,000 people coming to join us, and it's a nice tradition.
I was saying, to hear that mass in both with Polish traditions, and it's just a fascinating way to see that practice.
Yeah, and it just continued practice, and it's people really enjoy it.
And I would say one of the most poignant ways to kick off Polish Fest, which has happened for over 20 years now, tell us about what happens on Friday evening with the Capuchin Walk.
Yep, they've been with us for the last couple of years, and it's the Walk for the Hunger. And it started with a run walk, but now they're just doing the walk, which is a little easier. But that starts at 6 o'clock. They have pre-registration. I think they said they'll do a registration on the grounds too. But they always have some type of neat-looking shirt, and they have about 1,500 people. And you see this 1,500 people dispersed through the crowd. And, this big mass of colors of Capuchins, really neat. And then they come back. Every Saturday, you see him come back on Sunday, aww. And it's kind of neat.
But it's so meaningful to know that many people get together to help raise money for St. Ben's Meal Program and truly helping people. And the statistics last year, with about 1,000 people walking, helped provide 97,000 free meals and food boxes at their locations. So you really are bringing the community together and helping the community.
We do have Hunger Task Force on Sunday. You get free to get in with the food donation. Military people are free to get in. Seniors are discounted. Children 15 and under are free to get in. So it's very affordable. It's not $5 Friday. You come in at $5 from noon to 4 p.m., 5 p.m., and then it's $10, and it's $18 for full ticket at the gate. So it's not an expensive kickoff to see all these bands and everything.
And it's a great value for your dollar. It's one of the most unique festivals we have here in Milwaukee, polishfest.org. Thank you so much, Jeff Kudurski, for all that you do to help make Polish Fest still one of our vibrant festivals and for making things happen at the Polish Center of Wisconsin.
Dziękuję. Thank you. I appreciate it
thank
for having
you.
Me.
Unfortunately, the only Polish I think I really know, piwo.
Oh, that's a good one. That's that's our Tyszki beer. We're imported from Poland coming in.
And it's delicious. And also, what's the name of the big white fluffy dogs that we get to pet and visit?
The sheepdogs?
Yes.
Yeah, they're going to be there too. They're coming to me. They're amazing to come in. And of course, we have a vodka tasting and blackberry brandy, and
we could talk all night. Jeff Kudurski.
Vodka tasting is works.
Wow. So, what is that website?
www.polishfest.org. Or else you can also do polishcenterwisconsin.org.
Thank you very much. I look forward to seeing you there and maybe toasting with a pierogi.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here, and stay with us. We are going to find out about Guitar Town Festival on Saturday as we celebrate Les Paul's, what would have been his 111th birthday. But now we go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center. Here is Jen Gregg.
What's on Tap with Sandy Max is back on WTMJ.
Ah, the sounds of Les Paul and Mary Ford together, and I'm playing it on purpose. Today would have been the 111th birthday of Les Paul, the Wizard of Waukesha. A lot of legacy there in all of the influence that Les Paul had, starting in the 40s when he was experimenting with the solid body electric guitar, which really hadn't been done, and then moving on into all sorts of technical innovations, reverb, and different types of recording in studios, then his influence still excites musicians now and continues to influence musicians. So a lot of legacy. There is a concert tonight at Music 6S in New Berlin that started about an hour ago, absolutely free. And Kitty Softpaw, fun local band, is about to go on stage in about an hour. So if you're looking for a great group of musicians who are excited to celebrate the legacy of Les Paul, you will find it tonight in New Berlin at Music 6S with those free bands. Plus on Saturday in Waukesha, it is the first ever Guitar Town Music Festival. And for all the details, I got to talk with the co-organizers, local musician Brad Smith of the band Kitty Softpaw, and his co-organizer.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ian Ash. I'm the lead singer from the band The Last Bees. And along with Brad here, I'm also one of the organizers of Guitar Town Music Festival.
Tell us about Guitar Town Music Festival in Waukesha, when it is, and why you created it.
Well, it's going to be on Saturday, June 13th in Waukesha at the Les Paul Performance Center in Cutler Park.
Is that right next to the library?
Yes, that's the one.
That stage?
Yeah. That's the one.
I know that.
Perfect. Big park, easy access. It's free. It's going from noon to 8 p.m. So this is a big celebration. Just come on in. We've got six bands all playing original music. This is a strong promoted theme. These bands that you're seeing are making the music, and we curated a really good show. And you mentioned like why we came up with this. Two reasons. One is Waukesha's got bragging rights. They can talk Les Paul like no one else can, and they've done some wonderful things. The city totally embraces the history. But a music event of bands playing, we always felt there's an opportunity. And there's been some things that have happened, but we're really focused on June 13th is 4 days after his birthday, which is June 9th. So every year we celebrate.
111th would have been his 111th birthday. Wow. I mean, you think about the century that he was around and the change that Les Paul made. Improvement, the advances.
Yeah, and that's part of it, is to make sure everyone knows of that. And not just from a history standpoint, but from an inspiration standpoint. He's from Waukesha, Wisconsin, and this guy changed the music industry. And that is not hyperbole. Because of him, we have modern recording techniques. We can mix. We can do sound on sound. All musicians out there, they know that Les Paul gave us the ability to play on top of tracks that had been pre-recorded. Before, it was a mic in the room, and you grabbed it when you got it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Les Paul, that to me, even as important as his contribution to electric guitar, his recording contribution is probably even more widely impacted because that's all styles of music.
When you talk about creativity, and you know, we hear a lot about STEM and STEAM, it's like it's that combination of that scientific analytical brain with innovation and creativity. He just absolutely embodied that. And I feel like he was unstoppable. You know, the Rolling Stones are releasing an album in July. Mick and Kiefer, 82. Ronnie Wood, 78.
Wow.
But Les Paul was having his residencies in New York into his 90s.
True. Yes, absolutely. At the Iridium in New York. It's a fantastic venue. And when you go in there, you just see all the photos of all the great stars that he would host when they would come to town. Just so inspirational.
Yeah. Totally. And so just continued to be an inspiration and unstoppable. So to know that Waukesha is always embracing his legacy, and with with murals and with the huge guitars that are fun to take the walking tour. But now you, Ian, and Brad are kicking it up a notch with a specific Guitar Town Music Festival.
Right. So the focus is original music, kind of a nod to Les. This is original. This is innovative. A variety of bands in the rock vein. This is a family-friendly event. So we really welcome people to come check out these acts, support them. But it is just the celebration of innovation in Waukesha. We're going to have a maker's market as well, so people doing crafts, kind of music themed. Really cool things is like a petting instrument petting zoo. So White House of Music, one of our sponsors, is going to put out instruments for kids to check out and parents to have children or adults of all ages to get introduced to music. So in general, there's that large celebration. And kind of, if I may segue, is that's the interest with Chad Smith Foundation, my brother's foundation. Chad is the one of the Chili Peppers, and he's looking to give back to the music community that's been so good to him and our family. And the foundation is supporting events like this because they are inspiring people to play. And the other part of the foundation is to give people access to gear and then support them once they show interest. And so this is more on the inspiration side, but because White House of Music will be there showing them instruments, that's giving them access. And the way we're going to support it is just let them know there's a music community, that you know, there's ways to learn how to play and aspire to be on stage someday.
Yeah.
Because every band on there, all of them have a dream of playing their own music on stage, and they're going to get it.
And sharing that music. Ian, when did you first start performing music? What was your first exposure to be a performing musician?
Oh, man. Well, music ran in my family, and I think being a Beatles fan as a kid and seeing my parents watch the Beatles anthology on TV in the 90s, that just kind of left a mark on me. But then certainly growing up in Waukesha, Les Paul was just such a vibrant part of my community. And not only was that a talking point that brought people together, but I feel like fast forward now, it's still a talking point among all my musician friends and bringing us together, because I know all three of us that, you know, came up with Guitar Time Music Festival, myself, Brad, and our friend Mike, we all love playing Les Pauls, and, you know, we're all big into Gibson, and it's just a common theme that you see among musicians. We love playing Les Pauls, and we love who Les Paul was as a person. So yeah, I'm just so happy that we get all this great original talent from all around the state of Wisconsin to come and perform in his hometown.
He is Ian Ash. He is Brad Smith. We will share more about what's special about the Guitar Town Music Festival, because there are even more activities in addition to the performances and the instrument petting zoo, even more ways to get in depth with Les Paul. So stay with us here on What's on Tap.
Welcome back to What's on Tap on WTMJ.
Welcome back to What's on Tap and the beautiful sounds of Les Paul and Mary Ford. And I am here with the co-creators of the Guitar Town Music Festival in the hometown of Les Paul, Waukesha, Wisconsin. Circle your calendar for June 13th for this free music festival right there on the stage outside the public library at Cutler Park, which is, funny enough, called, what's it called, Brad?
Les Paul Performance Center.
I know. It sounds like it's a building, though, but it's just this great stage that looks like a little house almost.
It's permanent.
Yeah.
And the sound system, it's going to sound great. And that space with the woods and plenty of room, bring your blanket and your chairs. There's also seating.
And Ian, who are the bands that are playing? Because I know that you and your collaborators specifically wanted local bands, original music on stage for this festival.
Yes, that's right. We pride ourselves on having six various bands from throughout the state of Wisconsin. So we got the Spirit Shakers from Kenosha. They're a fun hip-hop storytelling jam band type vibe. We've got Racing Pulses out of Madison. They're a new wave trio. We've got Violet Wilder out of Milwaukee. They're eclectic pop with three strong female voices and string instruments. We've got Valley Kill out of Eau Claire, kind of an Evanescence-sounding, female-driven progressive rock. We've got The Last Bees out of Waukesha. That's my rock outfit. We're kind of feel-good rock, pop, and indie stuff. We've got our headliner, Bellevue Suite, out of Milwaukee, and they are modern melodic rock, and they really do rock, let me tell you.
Fun! So that's a full day. I mean, is this a bring your picnic chair? And
absolutely. And you can come and go. You know, downtown Milwaukee, Waukesha is great too. It's very walkable. They have a variety of fun, unique, you know, no chains, all due respect. It's really an original downtown. If those who haven't been there, for those who are, they get it. Go to the website, guitartownfest.com, yeah, for more details. You'll get all the updates, but you can also sign up to get a free minibus tour. It lasts about 45 minutes. That goes to all the Les Paul-centric buildings including Club 400, where he and Mary Ford made their debut. I mean, they were the kings of the road in the early 50s. I mean, international superstars. It started in Waukesha at Club 400. So go have a Schlitz at Club 400 and say you were there.
Well, and the leader of this tour is Sue Baker of the Les Paul Foundation.
It is so
Sue
fortunate.
Sue knew Les.
Like, very well.
That's right.
You can ask Sue, like, hey, what did Les think about this, that other thing? Or is it true that Les Paul and Mary Ford did this? Sue knows.
She's a fountain of knowledge.
Yeah,
that.
It's true.
So fortunate.
Yeah. If you're into Les Paul at all, you definitely want to come and do this tour because Sue, exactly like you said, she was very good friends with Les the last 10 years of his life especially. So come check it out.
Yeah.
We're trying to pull it all. And the cherry on top is Gibson as a sponsor has given us a Les Paul custom electric guitar. It's called the 70s model. It's worth almost $4,000. We are running a sweepstakes and we'll give that away to a lucky citizen who enters. And you enter through our website. Also on site, you can enter with QR codes and all that. But if you want to get a jump on it, guitartownfest.com website gives you details to enter into this opportunity to win a free Les Paul.
Well, you both mentioned that you are. That's amazing. GuitarTownFest.com. Circle your calendar June 13th in Cutler Park in Waukesha. And before I let each of you go, briefly, both of you said, oh my gosh, we love Les Paul guitars. So Ian Ash, your favorite Les Paul guitar?
I love the gold tops personally. That's the newest one I bought.
I've got a 40th anniversary, which has P90s, and it's the warmth. You plug that into a Marshall amp, it's the sound of rock. You hear so many songs the minute you play a bar chord with that combination. So it's kind of short speak for you. Want to play rock and roll? Buy a Les Paul and a good tube amp and you're there.
Brad Smith, Ian Ash, thank you for being here and thank you for organizing the first ever Guitar Town Music Festival, possibly the beginning of a fine tradition.
Thank you, TMJ.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Hope to see you out there.
A Les Paul classic track to put you in the mood to go and celebrate today what would have been his 111th birthday. Get ready to turn up the sounds of Les Paul on the song you need to hear next on What's on Tap.
You're listening to What's on Tap with Sandy Max on WTMJ. And now, feast your ears. This is the song you need to hear.
Most blokes are going to be playing at 10. These go to 11.
We celebrate a Wisconsin icon born in Waukesha 111 years ago today, Les Paul, who changed music forever with his guitar playing, recording innovations, and from Les Paul and Mary Ford, a song that was years ahead of its time in 1951, pioneering the use of multi-track recording, overdubbing, even tape delay to create the lush and layered vocal harmonies from Mary Ford. Here they are together. How High the Moon is the song you need to hear on What's on Tap.
Your need-to-know cultural snapshot of Wisconsin and beyond. This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee. A deep dive into all things intriguing, riveting, and entertaining. Now, here's your host, Sandy Max.
Welcome to the second hour of What's on Tap. You're about to hear the voices of actors you've seen on stages all around our state for decades, even together in the cast of the Milwaukee Repertory Theater's A Christmas Carol, for years, and they are a talented married couple who are portraying a talented married couple in the world premiere play called George and Gracie, A Love Story, written by Tammy Workentine, her playwriting debut, and performed with her husband, James Pickering. It's a George and Gracie, A Love Story cast party this hour with the stars of the show as we get into this closing weekend of George and Gracie at the Milwaukee Rep's Stackner Cabaret.
I'm Tammy Workentine.
And I'm James Pickering.
Tell me about George and Gracie, A Love Story, May 1st through June 14th at the Stackner Cabaret. What is the plot of this story?
It's a story about George Burns going on stage for the first time without his beloved Gracie. And he doesn't know if he can do it. So it takes place 1 hour before he goes on. And he's backstage and he's trying to figure out what it will take to be able to go on without his partner.
How long were George and Gracie a performing pair?
They performed for about 40 years together.
Wow.
Through vaudeville, radio, movies, and television. They were in a television sitcom called The Burns and Allen Show, which ran for 8 years. And that was, at the time, and I think still is, the longest-running situation comedy in the history of television.
Mm-hmm. Tammy and James, it was funny. My introduction to Burns and Allen was the TV show because I was a kid in Louisville and we had cable TV. We were one of those test markets. And it was one of those shows, like, what are we going to air? Yeah. Something old. But they're hilarious.
I know.
They're absolutely hilarious.
And at the end of the television show, their last 2 minutes was always some part of their vaudeville routines. And really, I think that vaudeville permeated their entire careers. What they learned in vaudeville was what they applied to all of the other media in which they were appearing.
Absolutely. And I, you know, when they went into radio because they needed to make money a different way. And that was the new medium. And he really had to talk her into it. But they did it for 19 years. It was
19
a long
years
time.
The
and then television came through. And what's really interesting about, I'm so impressed with the intelligence of George because he knew that they weren't actors. So he decided to take the whole idea and make it kind of self-conscious, where he would stand at the side of the proscenium and say, you know, my name's George Burns, and we're in a television studio, and you're going to come into this set, and you're going to see this show.
And later on, he would insert himself. He would walk into the show. And later on, he realized, no, I don't really have to do that. So he would, you know, it was almost always a plot that Gracie had cooked up to involve George in some way that he didn't necessarily want to be in. But he invented for himself a study upstairs in which he had a television, and he could watch on television what was going on in the rest of his house. It was really cool. You know, as George
it's
says—
It's inventive.
He says, he says in the course of the play, he said, we weren't actors. What did we know about television? Yeah. And then he also says, but coming then again, what did television know about television?
Absolutely.
So they were sort of inventing this kind of thing.
At the same time
as Ernie Kovacs and a bunch of other really, you know—
creative people, like early adapters, where we're talking about all sorts of technology now. And like you said, to make a living, if we're performers and people aren't going to the stages to see vaudeville, but this is what we do, we tell stories and entertain, how do we keep evolving? So it's a real testament. And for their marriage to have lasted that long. So they performed together 40 years. How long were they married?
38.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that both of you know this so well.
Yeah. Well, we have to. She wrote the play. People will get wise if we don't.
Well, and I also think what's interesting, in the early vaudeville days, they came together as partners. He had had 17 partners prior to this.
One of them was a seal.
And when he hooked up with Gracie, he realized very quickly that she was getting all the laughs. And so he switched roles.
He took her on as his straight man. And they were just being mediocre. You know, they were playing Nutley, New Jersey and Pottsville, Pennsylvania, and they weren't getting anywhere. And as soon as they realized, no, the audience wants to hear her do the punchline, he started revamping the
act.
I love his lack of ego in all of this.
You also think
lack
about
of ego and the love of money.
Love of money. That's true. Right. But the fact that he was willing, I mean, I think you look at a man in that period, you know, that time period, the comedians, that's the star of this thing. And the fact that he was willing to switch that around because it was better.
Yeah.
I love it.
Because there were men and woman acts. There were, you know, man and woman twosomes. And George, but they all fell into categories, some of which are in place. Is this a Dumb Dora act? Is this a Dizzy Dame act? What is this? Mm-hmm. You know, and it was something completely unique as they discovered through.
I'm so excited that you're telling this story on stage. You're getting a preview here on What's on Tap of George and Gracie, a love story with the playwright herself, Tammy Werkentine, who's also, you are Gracie on stage.
I am.
Aha. And?
And I'm George.
James Pickering, married in real life as well. So we'll tell more stories and give you more previews. Stay with us on What's on Tap.
This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max.
Might recognize that theme song. I don't know that I would have recognized it immediately, even though I watched the Burns and Allen show on early cable TV. And that classic comedy with timing and smarts and just not mean-spirited either. Mm-hmm. It was a different style of comedy then. And the reason we play the George Burns and Gracie Allen TV show theme song is because it's such a fascinating story about a married performing couple. And a married performing couple are bringing a world premiere play to the Stackner Cabaret May 1st through June 14th. It is called George and Gracie, A Love Story. Tammy Werkentine and James Pickering, real life husband and wife, are portraying married actors. Well, not actors, but married entertainers. I was listening to you, George Burns and Gracie Allen. And Tammy, what is it that made you say, I have to tell this story and I want to try writing a play about it for my very first play?
Well, we had a love story. You know, we met later in life, and it's been a gift for the both of us. And at one point...
How did you meet? Tell us the
we were doing
James
a play,
and Tammy.
Yeah, we were doing a play together, and we were friends at that point. Jim was married to Rose Pickering.
Right, and she was in the process of passing away from cancer, and Tammy would send me home with pots of pot roast that she had made for us, because, you know, I can't cook anyway. And there was nothing going on. And it was
that's just, kindness
she,
yeah.
was well, very I, kind of
yeah,
her.
And I knew Jim
that.
As this duo. And after she had passed away, we had become friends. And then we just hung out a lot and afterwards. And I was going through a divorce, and he had lost his spouse, and we just became friends. And then
one night, I'll tell the date. One night,
maybe.
We went to a restaurant after a performance of Christmas Carol about 7 o'clock in the evening. We went to this restaurant, and we had, like, you know, barbecue shrimp and all kinds of stuff. And we sat there, and we just started yapping and eating and drinking and yapping. And after a while, we turned around, and the only other people in the joint were waiters who were looking at their watches, wondering if we were ever going to leave. And I walked her to her car, and I walked back to my car. It was freezing. It was windy freezing. And we discovered later on that on our way home, we both sort of went, huh, is this a thing?
Yeah, it was
Turns out it was.
Yeah.
Aww.
I also, you know, work gets a little more scarce the older you get as well. And I just thought... I said to him, I should write us a play. I mean, why not? And then I said, we should do George and Gracie. And part of it was their personalities fit our personalities. And so I thought that would be funny. And it was just something I talked about for a long time until I finally put pen to paper. It took a while, I'll tell you that, and many, many machinations.
She's been working on it for over 4 years.
Sure. Yeah. Just the research alone.
Mm-hmm. Research alone, but also finding a way to tell the story.
Sure. That's interesting and relatable, and that also preserves their history. But it's interesting when you just said, we were just talking about the evolution of George and Gracie over 40 years from vaudeville to radio to television. Mm-hmm. You just said, like, here's how I want to survive and continue to do my craft. There aren't that many roles. Mm-mm. I'm going to create one. Yeah. I'm going to write. So you are carrying that same thread of inventiveness and necessity and desire.
And in
I
the think process, so too. She wrote a big fat part for me, which was very,
it's
very nice
part.
Of her indeed.
It's a pretty good part.
Because you need a job too.
Right,
that's right.
Right. Well, I also, they had a marriage that was so much a part of what they did. And that intrigued me. And I feel like this place celebrates that. It celebrates marriage. I love that because we don't do enough of that where we go, man, these people worked it out.
Yes. And it's funny you should use the word work. One of the things George says, George has a number of monologues in the play, and one of the things he says, you know, people ask us about what made our marriage work. What do we do to make our marriage work? The answer is we didn't do anything. He says too many people look at their marriage like a business. When you work too hard at the business, when you get tired. When you get tired, you get cranky. When you get cranky, you fight, and then you're out of business. This is what we do instead. We do creative things like this.
Yeah. Well, and also, I was also working to find a way to tell this story. And a very dear friend of mine, Wolf Boart, who's in this, helping us with sleight of hand. So there's magic, there's vaudeville, there's physical comedy. It's really going to be very different than something you've ever seen before. And he said one day, if you had to do an elevator pitch to a little girl, a millennial, a 40-year-old, and then a person who would have been of age to know George and Gracie, how would you explain Gracie to them? And that was
exercise.
The impetus. And what happened then is it created an elevator. And this elevator, in the moment where George is trying to figure out, can he go on? We have another character by the name of Elevator Guy. And he becomes a muse for George, and he comes out. And George is brought into the elevator, which then functions as a time machine.
It's like if you remember Rocky and Bullwinkle. You watched that on cable, too, I think, in Louisville, Kentucky.
Yep.
Right, right. Do you remember Mr. Peabody and Sherman?
Yes.
Mr. Peabody had the Wayback Machine.
Yes, he did.
Well, the elevator functions a lot like Wayback Machine because it will not only take you to another place, it'll take you to another time.
What an inventive way to tell this story.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a preview of George and Gracie, a love story that will world premiere May 1st on stage through June 14th at the Stackner Cabaret. And we are with the creators and the people who will be bringing this to life. Tammy Workentine and James Pickering are my guests for this cast party. Stay with us for more previews and stories next on What's on Tap.
What's on Tap with Sandy Max is back on WTMJ.
I've had a hard day.
But, George, it's Rita Hayworth who wants us to come over. Orson's out of town and she's afraid to stay alone.
We'll have Rita come over here.
But if she comes over here and we go over there, she'll
still be alone, yeah.
That is a moment from George Burns and Gracie Allen when they had Rita Hayworth on their show, married to Orson Welles, Kenosha fella.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a wild world. That was a moment from the 1940s when they were a comedy duo. So I am with Tammy Workentine and James Pickering, renowned artists and performers you've seen on stage. And Tammy debuting her very first play called George and Gracie, A Love Story at the Rep, opens on May 1st through June 14th, where you and James will be portraying George and Gracie.
Yes, we will.
Who were a married performing couple, as are you. So we very sweetly learned how the two of you started your romance. How did George and Gracie start their romance?
Well, they were both looking for a partner.
Yes.
George's last partner had departed. It was actually a seal, and George was doing...
Oh, not a romantic partner. You mean performance partners is what they were looking for.
Yeah.
Okay, because
that's part of it. So he and Gracie appeared, and she was an Irish dancer, and he was a Jewish comedian, and they decided they were both without partners and wanted to work, so they'd put their acts together. So they put their acts together for a while, and George was delighted to have her along because George, whether he realized it or not, was falling in love with Gracie. But the difficulty with that was she was already engaged. She was engaged to a real handsome headliner in vaudeville named Benny Ryan. So George had his work cut out for her and told her, finally said that he was in love with her. And got them a gig doing when they were more and more successful in the act, they got a gig doing the Orpheum circuit. And he thought, okay, because they would be finished in San Francisco at the Orpheum where she grew up, you know, a place where she always wanted to be. It's like she got to pitch in Yankee Stadium. And so even that didn't work. And finally, she got taken ill. And George was broke because he wasn't working because she was ill. So he borrowed $400 from Gracie. And of the $400, he spent $260 on flowers to bring her while she was sick. And Gracie eventually said, anybody who would spend $260 of my money to buy flowers for me to be in love. So that's how they got together. And they finally got married in Cleveland in 1926.
Yeah.
What sparks in you hearing that story, Tammy?
Well, I love his desperation. You know, I mean, he had stamina. He knew she was, well, first of all, they were going to make good money. She was beautiful.
Yeah.
And she was talented. And they had a chemistry. And I just think, I just love how they fell backwards into love. You know what I mean?
That's exactly the way to put it. They fell backwards into love.
And they became these glorious partners. And I've written about private moments that they have at home in this play because it's something you don't get to hear much about.
Yeah.
And so I had to kind of make up, what would these two talk about when they were all on their lonesome? And that's a whole nother sweet spirit of this play.
Right.
Not just them performing, but also experiencing them privately.
That's wonderful. A preview. You're getting it here first. George and Gracie, A Love Story. It will be on stage at the Stackner Cabaret at Milwaukee Repertory Theater, opening May 1st, running through June 14th. And you're getting a preview with Tammy Workentine, playwright and performer as Gracie, and James Pickering, who will be George Burns. So stay with us. We have more stories to share. It's a cast party of George and Gracie. And I do have some questions lined up. Find out the story about the amusing original title of this play, and what aspects of George Burns and Gracie Allen that Tammy and James actually relate to, and get to know the rest of the cast. It's not a big cast, but also the rest of the George and Gracie team. So thanks for joining me, and we'll also hear some more of the classic comedy clips from George and Gracie's TV show and radio shows. So thank you so much for hanging out with me on What's on Tap. We'll get back into it, but right now we check in with the WTMJ Breaking News Center for the latest updates. Here is Jen Gregg.
Welcome back to What's on Tap on WTMJ.
Welcome back to What's on Tap, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee, handcrafted, homegrown, world-class. Discover more at visitmilwaukee.org. And we are world-class, got a world premiere play called George and Gracie, A Love Story. It will be at the Milwaukee Rep, the Stackner Cabaret, good intimate space there, May 1st through June 14th. It is a world premiere starring Tammy Werkentine and James Pickering, who are real-life married couple who are well-known performers in our area, and also written by Tammy Werkentine. This is your debut. How in the world does it feel to have not just it coming on stage after 4 years of working on this idea, but to like really feel, I would say, the joy of a world premiere? Or are there other emotions that go with that?
It's all of that and fear, you know? No, it's all of it. It's a really difficult thing to write a play. And it's also a really difficult thing to get a play produced. You know, it is not...
That's the business side of
things.
That
is the business side of things. And, you know, theaters have stacks of plays that are sent to them daily. And the fact that this was able to make it to the top of the stack, and not only that, be selected to be produced at the Milwaukee Rep is no small feat. I would say I'm incredibly proud of myself. And that's okay.
Bravo.
Right? You go,
no,
I'm proud of myself.
Step into it. Yeah. Come on. What is significant about it being produced at the Milwaukee Rep to you?
Because these are one of the biggest theaters in our country. So when you're able to get yourself on a big stage like that, the ability to be able to sell your play, it elevates. The other part of it is we are a world premiere. So we are part of what's called World Premiere Wisconsin, which is something that was started a couple of years ago. And it's a festival now that took place for half the year, and now it takes place for the entire year, celebrating all the new works that are in Wisconsin. And what happens with it is you are then advertised on their website as well as the website of the theater company. So the exposure for that and for people to see stuff all across the state that is available to them, you know, in their own hometown and perhaps, or let's go take a trip into Milwaukee to go see something that we might enjoy. It's exciting.
And so, a new play doesn't always mean experimental and edgy and challenging. Where I think sometimes people are like, oh, it's a new play. Yeah. And I don't know, where here's a new play that's all about this influential, beloved performing
absolutely.
Couple.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And old stuff.
And old stuff. Yeah. Well, and what you're
but
given.
Classic. But classic.
I know.
Truly,
absolute classic. I mean, these jokes are great. They've worked for hundreds of years and they will continue.
I'm going to play this one for you. This,
okay.
is, a, this is a George
this
and Gracie
moment. This is the one that cracks
moment.
Sandy
and, up, yes. It probably will get me again.
When I say, what fella wears the biggest hat, you must say, I don't know what fella wears the biggest hat, whatever I say.
Oh.
Do you understand that?
Well,
here we go. What fella in the army wears the biggest hat?
The fella with the biggest head.
It just caught me off guard. I just didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
It's just so simple.
Well, as Jim was mentioning, what kind of act is it?
I love you just called him George.
George, Jim.
Well done.
Right. You know, he'll come to anything.
Yes,
you know,
true.
Is it a Dizzy Dame? Is it a Dumb Dora? What they came up with was the term illogical logic. Gracie didn't tell a joke. She explained it. She would turn a single line into a three-act play. And that's when that's what makes her so fun. Because essentially, she's always saying to George, honey, you don't get it. You need to understand it this way. And by the end, you have everybody in the room going,
you know
that kind of makes sense.
Right. In that case, then you've pretty much set this up. I do want to share this one with you as well. This classic Burns and Allen clip. It's when Rita Hayworth is there and trying to impress the legendary actress.
Gracie.
Now go on, George. Be intelligent for Rita. Now, give us your opinion on rationing. How shall we solve the sugar shortage?
Look, honey.
Honey! Oh, he solved it. Now, George, what shall we do about the black market?
Oh, stop it.
Stop it!
So dumb.
It's one of the things she says.
But it's that logic that you were saying.
It's completely.
It's like some of the things that she says. Oh, George and Gracie in politics. They were essentially apolitical. They had their own belief, but that was never made public. But in the year 1940, the radio show wasn't doing very well. You know, the Depression really was just finally coming to an end, and they needed a gimmick. George is saying to himself, "Well, Gracie does everything I ask her to do. I have this idea. I have that idea. In fact, I've asked her to do everything but run for president of the United States." And so they embark on a campaign, a whistle-stop campaign that really took place.
31 stops.
From Los Angeles to Omaha.
Now, do you think it was legitimate or it was a publicity stunt or both?
It was a publicity stunt.
Oh, my God.
But people wrote her name
on
the ballot.
Gracie ran for president. She got 63 votes in Campbellsport, Wisconsin, in the Wisconsin primary.
Right, but that was only in one copy of the paper.
Yes.
And the Sentinel has a circulation of 187,000. So 187,000
times 63 is a lot.
Imagine me getting that many votes and I wasn't even there.
And they ask her, is she running as a Republican or a Democrat? Her own party, the surprise party.
Right, because her father was a Democrat and her mother was a Republican. And when I came out,
she was
a surprise.
That's right. And what is your mascot?
Oh, a kangaroo.
A kangaroo,
I see. Oh, you should see her. Her baby sticks her little head out of its pouch.
And what's the slogan?
It's in the bag.
It got to be where, that they could do things like, at one point, George starts to teach elevator guy comedy.
In the play.
And he says, here's how it worked with Gracie. You would just start talking about her family. He'd say, but Gracie, how's your brother?
Oh, you mean my brother, the window washer?
Your brother, the window washer. How is he doing?
Oh, he lost his job.
Your brother, the window washer, lost his job.
Yes, he was on the 20th floor, and when he stepped back to admire his work, well,
that's how he lost his job.
But what I love is you're going to get comedy, but like you said, also peeks into their private life.
Yes.
So more previews of George and Gracie, a love story, a world premiere play at the Milwaukee Rep Stackner Cabaret, May 1st through June 14th. I'm just honored to be with the playwright, Tammy Workentine, and also co-star with her husband, James Pickering, in the studio. Stay with us.
You're listening to What's on Tap with Sandy Max on WTMJ.
Now remember to watch your manners and don't put your feet on the table unless you take your shoes off first.
Unless you take your shoes off first. It's not, again, not what you expect. Illogical logic. I am with Tammy Workentine and James Pickering, the real-life married performing couple here in Milwaukee, who are bringing George Burns and Gracie Allen their love story to the stage. It's even called George and Gracie, A Love Story, and it will be world premiering at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater, Stackner Cabaret. And Tammy, you have written this play. How did you settle on the title, George and Gracie, A Love Story?
Well, it actually had a different title. Initially, it was called Natty and Googie because they had pet names for each other. She used to call him Natty.
Because they couldn't sleep. One night she couldn't sleep. And she would say, and she'd wake up. His real name is Nathan Birnbaum. George Burns. And
George, I can't sleep. Make me laugh.
How do you want me to make you laugh? Say
Googie.
Something funny. And so he said, Googie, Googie, Googie. So she became Googie and he was Natty. And that's how they talked to each other.
Right. But then I was told that the title wouldn't sell.
Right, because who has ever heard of them?
I would say it was distracting. I do think George and Gracie, A Love Story, will appeal to more people.
Right, yeah. Right.
I mean, a lot of the people who actually saw George and Gracie are dead. But a lot of them, thank God for cable TV like you.
Yes, that was my introduction.
They're acquainted with them. So.
Yeah,
and I remember them fondly. But I love that also touches on the depth of research that you've done and how you've woven in their private lives and how you feel that that's important in addition to preserving the chemistry and the comedy that they had on stage, which, you know, watching the two of you back and forth here is charming me because the two of you have this chemistry.
Well, we're just rehearsing. We're going to open this thing on the 1st of May. We got to do all the work.
I'm getting along. I told you guys, we're getting a preview of George and Gracie, A Love Story, legitimately, a little mini rehearsal.
And I'll get notes on the way home, I guarantee it.
You'll be the better for it, James.
Of course I will.
You will be bringing George Burns to life. What do each of you feel like you resonate with? Like, Tammy, what is it about Gracie Allen that you feel like, okay, we're in step on this? Like, this is something
her brain works the same way mine does.
Really?
I'm also a bit of a malaprop. I make up words all the time, and Jim is not that. And so he will start laughing, and I have no idea why, because I put some either a combination together or I've made up something. And I look at him because I think, that's exactly what it is. There is no argument. That word is it.
That's right. And like if you go roughshod over something, ramshackle, she just combines them and talks about going ramshod. Which
ramshod.
It ought to be a word.
It's a good word.
Even though it isn't. It's a particularly, perfectly good word.
It's a perfectly good
and
word.
And you understood it, so that's...
Yes,
that's the battle right there.
Well, there's context because sometimes she'll actually wave her hands around and give you exactly
demonstrate it.
And he loves it when I can't find the word because he wants to wait and see what I'm.
I want to really desperately. What's this one going to be? My God!
I can't wait, and his hands are itching, and you know it's like, yeah.
Well, that's good then. So then that would help you also write this play if you feel like
you have to figure out how somebody speaks. Right.
So I had
to kind of just practice how I think she speaks. She's also very sweet, which I am, of course, as well.
Yes, of course,
and,
you are all the time. So
that
was
wasn't
easy.
Hard to, no, you know, to manufacture
like
that.
Graft.
But yes, Jim, what makes you like George Burns?
Well, I just like George Burns because he's infinitely patient.
Is that what you have in common? You're channeling your George?
George, I know that George Burns was able to crack up just about every other performer. Two of their best friends were Jack Benny and his wife, Mary Livingston. They went out to dinner with him and they were best of friends even after both of their spouses had passed on.
More tidbits and who else is behind the scenes of George and Gracie, A Love Story, with the stars of this world premiere play, Tammy Werkentine and James Pickering. This cast party continues on What's on Tap.
This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max.
Time has flown with my cast party. George and Gracie, A Love Story, world premiere play, will be on stage at the Milwaukee Rep Stackner Cabaret starting May 1st through June 14th. And created, written by Tammy Werkentine in the studio with me, who is an actress you recognize and now debut playwright, playing Gracie Allen and her husband, James Pickering.
And I did some
George
writing,
Bird.
Too. I was in charge of making sure all the apostrophes were in the right place.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it.
No red pen was allowed, I would imagine.
Other than that, beat it.
Hey, honey, what do you think of it? Okay, I'll shut up.
Okay, we have about 30 seconds left. So the two of you are George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Right.
We have Elevator Guy.
Elevator Guy is played by John Riker. John Riker originally came to the Rep as an intern and is moving through the ranks and is wonderful. He sings in this show. He does all this crazy stuff.
He's learned the baritone ukulele.
There we are. And then we also, who is in charge of all the magic and all the great movement that happens through this, is a dear friend of mine and colleague that I met when I was at Cornish College of the Arts back in Seattle by the name of Wolf Boart. You can find his information on Spoon Tree Productions, and you will see some of the most amazing shows online for
him.
It'd
be some of the most fun Googling you've ever done because they are terrific. He is a unique talent. He's really wonderful.
And then we have our director, Laura Braza, choreography by Molly Rohde, and music by Alyssa Rohde.
Yes.
So we are surrounded by a team, and Jim and I are learning to dance. And
we're dancing and singing at this
and
play.
And you could ask, will this marriage survive? Well, we'll find out on opening night.
Who knows?
Actually, yeah.
Well, congratulations. Thank you so much for joining me and for sharing the creation of this play, the evolution, and having it come together. I'm
always
very
a pleasure
excited.
Always
to
a
you.
Pleasure, Sandy. Yes. Thank
George
you.
George and Gracie, A Love Story at the Stackner Cabaret at the Milwaukee Rep, May 1st through June 14th. Break a leg and best wishes.
Thank you.
What an honor to have both James and Tammy join me. And that was George and Gracie, A Love Story, which is continuing at the Stagner Cabaret through this weekend. Sunday will be the last performance at the Rep of George and Gracie, A Love Story. But I had been chatting with James Pickering sometime last year when he said that they were working on this together, and I was already excited about it. So to have Tammy Werkentine, known so well for her acting, but have this be her debut play and have it launch right here in Milwaukee at the Rep is very exciting, and it is cool to see it come together. I did see the show few weeks ago. It is absolutely charming. It is all the things that they previewed and what you would want. And I really love that they are preserving entertainment history by telling this story and the behind the scenes story and their romance. And there's a lot of fun in it and there's a lot of sweetness in it. And there's just, it's a very meaningful story. I think it will touch you. And if you're interested, do not miss out. Also, you can catch up with that full conversation on the What's on Tap podcast to share with your fellow theater-loving friends in time for this closing weekend. Last performance Sunday in the intimate Stackner Cabaret at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater. And I'm excited to see, even after George and Gracie, A Love Story closes, James Pickering and Tammy Workentine continue to act, so I'll be interested to see what their next creative projects are. So we'll stay in touch with them here on What's on Tap. And we have another half hour together before Milwaukee Brewers game coverage will start at 8:30. And we'll see how late the Brewers game goes tonight. 12 innings last night, but worth it for a victory. But coming up, we're going to continue to celebrate Les Paul's 111th birthday with a visit from a guest from the Les Paul Foundation to put his, his innovations and creations into perspective and why we should celebrate Les Paul. Plus your invitation to the Guitar Town Music Festival on Saturday, an announcement of a special guest I have on What's on Tap tomorrow as well, who is connected to the Guitar Town Music Festival. And you might have heard that Wisconsin had a lot more visitors last year. Which film helped boost Wisconsin tourism last year? Think about that. You might automatically know. You might go, oh, I know exactly what. Well, I'll tell you which film, and then also a nice recap of the Milwaukee Arts Board Awards. So stay with me here on What's on Tap on WTMJ.
Your need-to-know cultural snapshot of Wisconsin and beyond. This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee, a deep dive into all things intriguing, riveting, and entertaining. Now, here's your host, Sandy Max.
Thank you for joining me. We got about 20 minutes together before the Milwaukee Brewers coverage starts as they are out in Las Vegas. That's why the late start. But they're playing the Oakland Athletics in Las Vegas. And last night's 12-inning game tested a lot of Brewers fans' stamina and strength. There were a lot of tired people around the office here today. So you know you can hear it right here starting at 8:30, and hopefully we get another Brewers victory. And I am happy to be here. I'm going to tell you what film helped boost Wisconsin's tourism last year. What do you think it might be? I will reveal that in just a few minutes. And I also want to share with you some of the people who are making an impact in our community with the Milwaukee Arts Board Awards. But I've got to start, because you know what a huge music fan I am, by mentioning and honoring one Mr. Les Paul. The man who, in 1941, built a prototype of a solid body electric guitar, and that was just the beginning of his innovations. 111 years ago today on June 9th in Waukesha is when Les Paul was born. His ingenuity, innovation, and curiosity undeniably changed the music world and continues to inspire creativity in other artists and engineers and technicians. And we have some different ways that we're celebrating in the community. But so I'll share with you a very fun event that is happening for free on Saturday. But I got a chance to talk to the Les Paul Foundation Education Coordinator, Dr. Julie Palkowski, on What's on Tap. And I figured, let me go to a source. Like, I know that I'm impressed with Les Paul's accomplishments, but I asked Julie, really, why should we be celebrating Les Paul?
When you say Les Paul, the current generation may think of the guitar, right? But Les Paul is more than the guitar. There's a man behind it. There's a story of persistence, curiosity, creativity. He had passions in music as well as technology. And so what he hopefully is also known for is for the amazing technical musical production aspects and inventions that he brought to the front, which many of the current musicians, you know, whether it's Paul McCartney / even Chet Atkins, Bing Crosby, Eddie Van Halen, you name it. These are artists that have used Les's innovations in music, in music production,
yeah,
and audio
not just
production.
Electric guitars, but
exactly.
Also in recording and multi-track.
Exactly.
And what are some of the things that we have now because of the work that Les Paul did?
Well, I mean, for instance, in this studio, you know, you probably have some dials and knobs that can allow you to have reverb or echo or you know, some of those other sound on sound, multi-track, you know, the different layers of complexity in music and audio production. What you hear now are usually attributed to the work that Les Paul did in his inventions in his own studio, whether it was in the home studio or his garage studio that he created.
Do you know what his motivation was to manipulate sounds with
He was always pursuing his sound, his own unique sound. And so that started basically when he was about 13 years old or even a little younger. He was constantly taking things apart in his mom's house. There's a story where he took
apart. You got to put it back together, though.
Exactly. Well, and you know, his mom got a new player piano, said, "Don't you dare touch it." Of course, she leaves. He takes it apart. He wants to know how things work. And so I think that's what
88
he did.
Keys. That's a, when you think about a player piano and all the mechanics, because that had the roll, right? And
it had
the
roll.
The plink, 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 plink.
But
wow.
That was his inspiration for sound on sound, hard to say. You know, you had these holes that were punched and they were layered, and then the piano would respond to those holes. And so he was wondering, well, if a player piano can do that, could we someday do that with different instruments? And what might that sound like? So it took many years later for him to dive into the technological ideas of how that is created.
He was doing STEM before we knew what STEM was.
Exactly. So it's just, so the importance of Les is just celebrating all of those unique Renaissance ideas that he had as a musician and as a technician.
Dr. Julie Pawlkowski, Les Paul Foundation Education Coordinator, sharing the impact of Les Paul on what would have been his 111th birthday today. And I tell you what, if you go to the Les Paul Foundation's website, it's actually really easy. Les-Paul.com, Les-Paul.com. There's even a birthday video on the homepage there. And if you go to the education section, there are posters you can print out. It is just an absolute wealth of knowledge about Les Paul as an inventor, Les Paul as a musician, and just so much to learn and appreciate about the Wizard of Waukesha. And Waukesha is going to be celebrating with a free festival Saturday. It is the first ever Guitar Town Music Festival. And, you know, I don't know if you've heard of Mile of Music in Appleton, but the whole gist of that festival is all original music by local artists, but like no covers, like all original music. So this is going to be 100% original Wisconsin music of all kinds, from bands from Kenosha to Eau Claire at the Guitar Town Music Festival. It's from noon till 8, right there on that stage, right by the Waukesha Library. And it is in Cutler Park. And the bands, the Spirit Shakers from Kenosha, the Racing Pulses from Madison, Violet Wilder of Milwaukee, Valley Kill from Eau Claire, the Last Bees from Waukesha, and Bellevue Suite from band members from Milwaukee and Waukesha. But really celebrating original music, and also, because it's free, encouraging everybody to come out and play. And there will be an instrument petting zoo, and maybe you'd like to give away one of your instruments. Are you one of those people who's like, I would love to play the guitar, but I got one as a gift and never, ever played, or got an old clarinet? You can donate an instrument so that way you can inspire the next generation. And musical instrument donation drive. And one more thing to know, if you really love Les Paul and you got somebody in your life who absolutely loves to play guitar, or that's you, there's a raffle at the Guitar Town Music Festival. You could win a Gibson Les Paul 70s Custom in ebony, a black beauty, for a raffle. This is a Gibson guitar that is worth $4,000. And who wouldn't want that? That would be a heck of a prize to get. So really is celebrating Les Paul originality and music, and it is absolutely free. And another layer to the Guitar Town Music Festival on Saturday at Waukesha, it is presented by the Chad Smith Foundation. And you've probably heard us reporting here on WTMJ about the Chad Smith Foundation, a new organization that is really dedicated to bringing after-school music programs, because, you know, a lot of time the arts are what gets cut from school funding. And Chad Smith, drummer for Red Hot Chili Peppers, has a lot of family here locally, knows what a big difference it made in his life
to play music, especially in high school, to energize and motivate him. And now he's a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. Well, Chad Smith launched his foundation here in Milwaukee, and they hope to replicate it in other cities. But starting here, and will be part of the Guitar Town Music Festival, I'm very excited to tell you that Chad Smith will be my guest here on What's on Tap tomorrow at 6. Chad will Zoom in, and we'll get to know more about the Chad Smith Foundation, why he started it, what vision he has for the future. And you know, I have to ask Chad Smith about being on Saturday Night Live and playing with Paul McCartney. I can't have to ask him that. So, and he's also, he's on the new Rolling Stones album that's coming out next month. So Chad Smith is living a life and he's giving back through the Chad Smith Foundation. So make a note, maybe set your phone alarm to join me at 6 o'clock tomorrow here on What's on Tap to hear from Chad Smith. So, you know, Waukesha is going to be a happening spot on Saturday. The whole state of Wisconsin was a happening spot to visit last year. A new report has been released. Interesting statistics about increased tourism. And what movie do you think helped boost Wisconsin tourism last year? Find out next on What's on Tap.
You're listening to What's on Tap with Sandy Max on WTMJ.
Welcome back to What's on Tap. And good news. Something to be proud of. Wisconsin's tourism industry just reported, I think yesterday, that we had our best year ever. Governor Tony Evers and the Wisconsin Department of Tourism announced that 2025 was the fourth year in a row that we broke records. Get this, a record $27 billion economic impact with tourism. And you remember we had a couple of years ago, we had Top Chef. So I knew that, you know, we'd start some of that ripple, but you like to see that that continues to be a wave instead of just a spike. So $27 billion economic impact, nearly 118 million visits to Wisconsin, and more than $1.7 billion in state and local tax revenue. Oh, we all like to hear that because we talk about the economy. And so that helps when other people visit and enjoy our state. Tourism supported more than 183,000 jobs in Wisconsin. And the biggest draws, when you look back at 2025, the NFL draft in Green Bay. That was a huge April event. And so much so that other NFL markets were envious of us, of how many people showed up around Lambeau Field. EAA Air Venture in Oshkosh, where we know every year, because I'm always excited how many people from around the world, like truly fly in and around the country, fly in their small crafts. And just what a gathering of people who love aviation, whether it's historic and World War II airplanes and even older aircraft than that, to the very, very modern aircraft and to spacecraft. So that is such an appeal. So Oshkosh drawing people in. And then, of course, you've got festivals and fairs and attractions. But I would say one of the more surprising tourism success stories that was listed out in the state's press release came from Door County, where officials say visitation increased particularly in November and December, thanks to a movie that was filmed and set in Wisconsin. What movie inspired travelers to head north and experience Door County for themselves? It was not a Hollywood blockbuster. It was not a Marvel movie. It wasn't even a movie about Bob Uecker, which there's the documentary comes out next month. It was a made-for-TV Christmas movie filmed in Door County, A Cherry Pie Christmas.
You excited to head up to Door County?
Door County is the Christmas capital of the Midwest.
Mom has been acting really strange ever since I got here.
You just focus on winning that cherry pie contest.
Guess who I ran into the other day? Mitch Henriksen. He's single, you know?
We broke up like 15 years ago.
Oh, yeah, that's the kind of plot that you come to expect from these charming holiday movies. But that's just great that it did turn people on and put them in a good mood and made them want to come to experience Door County for themselves. DoorCounty.com was very smart. They created a webpage with a cherry pie Christmas trail so you could visit the different filming locations. And it's still posted, DoorCounty.com/movie. And you can see they've set up a trail so you can go to bakeries, the Peninsula State Park where the Eagle Tower is, the Anderson Dock, also White Gull Inn at St. Nick's Tree Farm. So that was really smart to capitalize on, hey, if you're going to come, may as well walk in the footsteps of a cherry pie Christmas. And good news, if you're like, oh man, I missed it, or I actually really enjoyed it, I thought it was sweet, you can watch A Cherry Pie Christmas for free right now. It is on YouTube. You can find it on the Nicely TV YouTube channel. So more Wisconsin pride, and we are now excited to have a Wisconsin film office officially, which is under the tourism department. So it seems like this could be a very good idea if we can get more and more productions that inspire people to come visit our state after seeing it on the screen. So if you want to see some Door County, A Cherry Pie Christmas, good any time of year, or save it for July 25th and have Christmas in July. Next, we will catch you up on what's happening tomorrow on What's on Tap. Stay with us here. Welcome back to What's on Tap. Thanks a bunch for joining me. We are just minutes away from Milwaukee Brewers baseball as they are in Las Vegas to play the Oakland Athletics. But thank you so much. Happy Les Paul's birthday to you. He would have been 110 years old today on June 9th. But I got to tell you, yesterday I got to talk to a music legend, Buddy Guy, who is going to be 90 this summer. He's performing July 26th at the Riverside Theater, and it was such an honor to talk to Buddy Guy. And I got a lot of feedback from people here at the office. They were like, oh my gosh, I have a Buddy Guy story for you. And so it's nice to know I'm not alone in my affection for Buddy Guy. If you'd like to catch up on that podcast, just text the word Buddy, B-U-D-D-Y, to the Siding Unlimited WTMJ Talk and Text line. Text Buddy to 855-616-1620, 855-616-1620. Text the word Buddy, and we'll get you that link so you can listen to it and share it with your other blues fan friends. And also in the music world, Chad Smith of the Red Hot Chili Peppers will join me on What's on Tap. He'll be my guest tomorrow at 6 o'clock. So you can hear from him about what it was like to work with Paul McCartney. And he'll tell you about the Chad Smith Foundation. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Sandy Max. Thanks for hanging out with me on What's on Tap, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee.